This is Too Political, the podcast in which two old friends talk about politics, the news, and whatever else we think of. My name's Arthur.
And this is Jason.
And together we're
Too Political.
Hi again, and welcome to Too Political Podcast, episode 9.
Number 9. I'm sorry.
Yes, it is. Number 9. Number 9?
Yeah.
Number 9?
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm doing fine.
That's good. I am fine, too. No, I'm not as bloody cold here.
Of course you are. You're fine.
Although, actually, it's gotten quite warm now. It's all the way up to 6, which is 42.8 degrees in your American temperature.
Oh, wow. It's kind of damp and rainy here. And it's so typical in the evenings in Washington, D.C. There's almost no air, so I have to put fans in my house in order to cool it down because the upstairs is like 78 degrees. And I'm sure everyone is absolutely fascinated by this. So, shall we begin?
Yes, we should. As soon as I tell the lovely listeners that 78 degrees is 25.5 degrees Celsius. Here we go.
Oh, okay. All right. So we should probably do special days.
Woohoo! You know, we have to come up with theme music for that.
Yes, I that's exactly what I thought. We'll have to work on that.
Yes.
You know, maybe we can...
You can never have enough theme music, I reckon.
No, you could never have enough theme music. That's totally true. So,
anyway, carry on.
Maybe we can write to David Letterman now that he's not insulting Sarah Palin anymore. Maybe he has some spare time. Did I say that out loud? Oh, I guess I did. Okay, our days, and these are two really good days. On June 18th, it is the Viola Gopher Count day. You think I make these things up? I don't. And we, of course, will have a link so you can learn all about Gopher Count Day. In fact, we will actually have two links about Gopher Count Day. Then the other day...
Well, hang on
day,
a minute. Where is this Viola Gopher Count held?
I think it's just a festival. I don't really think they round up gophers anymore. I think this is a figurative count, sort of like the way they did the election in Iran, you know, 40 million ballots in an hour and a half. Of course, that's totally believable, isn't it?
Handwritten ballots, no less.
Right, I digress.
That's in Viola, Minnesota, isn't it?
That's in Viola, Minnesota.
Correct. Well, I hope that the gopher count goes better than the senatorial election count goes there.
Yeah, well, one of these days...
I wonder if Fairy Princess Holly will be attending the Viola Gopher Count. I'll have to ask her. Anyway, what's the other day?
The other day is, and I will mispronounce this, I'm sorry to all of our listeners in Finland, is the Giannis, it's AATTO. Otto, this is actually kind of interesting. This is... a celebration. It's the Midsummer's Eve celebration. It's essentially, it is a celebration of light, summer, and a nightless night. Johannes, J-U-H-A-N-N-U-S, as the Midsummer is called in Finnish, originates from John the Baptist, whose commemoration and birthday is celebrated in Midsummer. So I guess they're running around cutting over people's heads. No, that would be wrong, wouldn't it? Anyway, so this is like their longest day of the year, and it sounds like essentially it's like the whole damn day. But it's kind of interesting. I thought it was sort of an interesting thing. It has some historical background on this in our link, and this, I think, segues really well into our first story, our first discussion, talking about John the Baptist and cutting off people's heads.
You talk about crazy religious people?
I'm talking about crazy religious people and imprecatory prayer or whatever the hell it's called. And
yes. I actually never heard of that before, but it's actually kind of interesting. And well, why don't I just play a little bit of a clip so that the listeners will know what we're talking about.
When you say you are praying for the death of somebody using imprecatory prayer, you then said, I asked who else, for whom else are you praying in that fashion? And you said, President Obama, are you praying for his death?
Yes.
So you're praying for the death of the President of the United States?
Yes.
Do you are you concerned that by saying that you might find yourself on some kind of a Secret Service call or FBI wanted list, or do you think it's appropriate to say something like that, or even pray for something like that?
I think it's appropriate to pray the Word of God. I'm not saying anything. What I'm doing is repeating what God is saying. And if that puts me on somebody's list, then I'll just have to be on their list.
You would like the President of the United States to die?
If he does not turn to God and does not turn his life around, I am asking God to enforce imprecatory prayers that are throughout the Scripture that would cause him death. That's correct.
That guy is batshit crazy. I'm sorry. He is batshit crazy.
I think one of the funniest things is I don't know who the radio host is, but through this whole thing, he's just like, the tone of his voice, you need to listen to the whole thing. The tone of his voice is like, you're kidding here, right? I mean, that's it's entirely
yes.
like you're kidding.
I also thought
what was hysterically funny was that, you know, the host asks, what is it, Reverend Pastor Drake, whether his view is the only view of Christianity. And, oh, no, it's not. But then he says, if Obama doesn't turn towards God, it's like, well, then I guess your view of Christianity is the only view of Christianity that's acceptable, because one might be able to say that perhaps he has turned towards God. It is amazing on so many levels. I think it would be interesting if, like, some imam who was here or some Islamic cleric had said a similar thing about George W. Bush and how the right would have just gone,
absolutely
apeshit over it. And how they still think it's not, you know.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is about this, we hear this kind of thing, well, we don't actually often hear this kind of thing, but it goes on all the time. And when we do hear about it, we think, oh, those people are just crazy. And they are, but it's common. Now, just recently, through a link on Roger Green's blog, I went to a far-right Christianist site in New York State. And in there, they talk about occupying. And essentially, it's this far-right Christianist thing that they have, where they talk about occupying the world until their Jesus returns. But on their website, and I'm going to read a couple of excerpts from it, because I think it's sort of illustrative of where a lot of these people are coming from. It says, the person is talking about what occupy means, and it says its first meaning in the dictionary, Webster's second or 11th or whatever that means, university dictionary, is, quote, to seize possession of and maintain control over by force, close quote. Sounds rather brutal, and rightly so. It is a term used to describe subjugation of a population which has been conquered by another. When Jesus was on the earth, the Romans were occupying Israel. Okay, so she sets the tone, the meaning mm-hmm. of occupy in the general sense. But then later on, she says, and this is a direct quote, we are commanded to take over the running of the government and subjugate it to the laws of God's kingdom. We are to infuse the kingdom into the culture. Our voice is the voice that is to supersede all others in the political arena. So they're talking about setting up a theocratic dictatorship, sort of like Iran.
Right.
And then she says, let's change the state and national laws so they line up with God's word. Let's restore the Judeo-Christian foundation that our country was founded upon. Let's not just take up space, let's occupy. Which, I mean, on the face of it, sounds to me like a treasonous sort of thing to say. Because mm-hmm. the country clearly is not a theocracy. It was never intended to be. There was a wall of separation between church and state, although it doesn't say that specifically in the Constitution. That was clearly the intent of the founders. So when you're talking about using your religious beliefs to create a violent act, like wishing on the death of the president or overthrowing the government to establish a theocratic dictatorship, those are treasonous comments, and
right.
yet they never get called out for it.
Well, yeah, and it you know, you had something from one of the who was it from Fox? The Fox News.
What about the comments?
Guy.
Yeah.
Shepard Smith, is that
yep,
his name
yep,
or something
right.
like that? Yeah.
That's right.
And, you know, reading this thing about, you know, the the fact that he's not really president because he's, you know, his you know, birth certificate is forged and why haven't we seen it and blah 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 blah, and it's blatant lies. And it's quite interesting that he's called people on this, but a lot of the times they don't, people are not called, and you then have these the talking heads, not the group, who would be fun to listen to in comparison to these other people, you know, like this, the thing that the piece that you sent me was from Paul Krugman, which was, I believe, from the New York Times.
Yeah.
And he's talking about, Glenn Beck, and how he's talked about, what is it? Here we have a network where, like it or not, millions of Americans get their news. He's talking about Fox, and it gives daily airtime to a commentator who, among other things, warned viewers that the Federal Emergency Management Agency might be building concentration camps as part of the Obama administration's totalitarian agenda, although he eventually conceded that nothing of the kind was happening. Now, the thing is that people are going to hear the first and ignore the second.
Yeah.
You know, this is the black helicopters are coming.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, the left has had some things that were just as crazy, and they
actually about concentration camps as well. The first time I heard about concentration camps was actually from leftists who were saying that the Bush administration was building them with a secret contract with Halliburton, or KBR probably, to build these concentration camps, and they were doing it under the guise of controlling illegal immigration or something like that. But what they really intended to do was to put dissenters in them. So, I mean, this has been around for quite a while. It's just now the right has seized it for their purposes.
And well, right.
And it was a myth then, and it's still a myth.
And it just shows the paranoia of both sides, and really the extreme paranoia of both sides, and just sort of, you know, alternate reality, parallel universe, which is the joke that I make all the time. But this is just, these people, you just got to go, they're just nuts, and they're just totally nuts. And when this stuff gets reinforced, or tolerated, or not challenged in any way, shape, or form, it simply allows these people to continue to believe that they're right, and that the boogeyman is out to get them, and that they have to strike at the boogeyman.
Yes, with their guns.
Or whatever, you know. Mm. It's like we had, you know, last week, the Holocaust Museum, and then this big argument over, oh, he's a leftist. No, he's a rightist. No, he's a leftist. No, he's a rightist. Oh, you know, he's aligned himself with, I don't know, it was this big, long discussion, like, well, the Islamic terrorists, they're leftists. Oh, no, they're really rightists. It's like, they're terrorists.
Yeah.
Period, end of story. It doesn't matter, you know, I'm lobbing a bomb, you know, I'm shooting someone, I'm blowing something up. I'm sorry, does it really matter what political, if they're to the left or to the right, they're a terrorist. It's just like, well, this is a terrorist to the right. This is a good terrorist. Oh, but if it's a terrorist who's on the left, he's a bad terrorist. Or, depending on your viewpoint, oh, this is a terrorist on the left. He's a good terrorist. He's an eco-terrorist. He burns car dealerships or housing developments on tops of mountains and then starts potential forest fires, which could wipe out all sorts of the things which these people are supposed to saying. But the right-wing terrorists who go around killing abortion doctors in church, they're bad. It's like, no, they're terrorists.
Well, the agenda on the right isn't to try to say that they're terrorists or good terrorists, because what their argument is there's no such thing as a right-wing extremist. That's what the talking point that they're trying to create
right
here. And they're doing it absurdly. I mean, there's nobody in the right mind, and obviously that lets out the entire right because they're not in the right mind. There's no normal person who would look at the guy at the Holocaust Museum and think he was a leftist. He was clearly a rightist. And he agreed with them in absolutely everything. Absolutely everything. And what it comes down to is some jerk from the Ayn Rand Institute was on Glenn Beck's show saying that this guy was a leftist because he was preaching a collectivist mentality, which is a leftist ideal. Well, that's bullshit. The right pushes collectivist idea. It's called religion.
Yes.
There's no difference.
Exactly.
The problem is, I think, that the right has no credibility on this issue because they attacked the Homeland Security assessment, which talked about lone wolves and talked about the threats from the right, partly because of the Obama election and also because of the declining economy and so on. And guess what? Here is a walking billboard for exactly what they were warning about. And the right now is caught with its collective pants down, so to speak, is now trying to cover it up and say, well, it's not one of us. It's one of them. And it's just so bleeding absurd.
Well, and the general over thing is that in bad economic times, this is historical, you know, crime goes up because it's bad economic times. There's unrest because it's bad economic times. I don't know if there's necessarily sort of more of these terrorist type acts, but this is what happens.
Well, I actually read a study recently that found that in bad economic times, that if a young man in particular, if he sees his parents suffering because of the bad economic times, he is far more likely to turn to right-wing extremism as a result. So there is a link between, and violent extremism at that. Mm-hmm. So there is a link between the deterioration of an economy and the growth of far-right extremism. But, you know, the leftists aren't off the hook either. They're often doing things as well. Some not usually because of economic things. It's usually around some sort of issue or other. But the thing is, is one of the points is that was essentially what you were making is that we've got to get over this notion that it matters what end of the spectrum a terrorist is coming from. If they're committing a terrorist act, they're a terrorist and should be treated as such. And who gives a damn what their political motivation is? Ultimately, they should be caught. They should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law.
If you're lobbing a bomb, you're lobbing a bomb. Period.
Exactly.
End of discussion. You know,
exactly.
We're not. I mean, you know, it's not like we're in North Korea. It's not an oppressive regime. There is no possible justification for doing something like that.
No.
You know, for getting a gun and shooting somebody, for getting a rifle and shooting somebody. And I think these things are probably going to continue to happen, but it just doesn't matter, you know, or it's getting a gallon of gasoline and going and burning down these communities. And, you know, and they're just like, well, no one was hurt. It says, it doesn't make any difference. Somebody could have been. And in one of the cases, it did start a forest fire.
Yeah, and the larger issue too, as you were saying before, was how this extremist rhetoric is reinforced by their media. Now, in the case of the right, they have they have easily accessible media behind them in faux news, where you know the talking heads on that channel are always spouting this right wing nonsense. The left doesn't have that quite so much. They have to resort. They have to use the internet primarily to join their choir. And the right does that too, obviously, but they, as I said, they have faux news, they've got The Spectator, and they've got all kinds of other things.
Well, also, I mean, if you really think about it, probably the only sort of people who you could truly say that are on the left are Rachel Maddow and Keith Olbermann. And they're
probably Amy Goodman as well on Democracy Now.
Oh, okay. I was thinking sort of television-wise.
Oh, yeah.
But the whole thing is that they're not as extreme as, you know, an O'Reilly or a Hannity or a Beck. You know, if you're doing a spectrum, it's just not comparable. So
the thing about Rachel Maddow and Keith Olbermann, though, is that I've heard both of them correct themselves when they've said something that was an error or something was misinterpreted, they've clarified, and so on. I've never, ever heard Bill O'Reilly back down about anything. Glenn Beck at least has a little bit from time to time. Sean Hannity is never wrong, of course.
No, they're not.
And that's what annoys me so much about faux news, is that they are always right. They have the only truth, the only perspective that's valid. It's not just that they think that they're the only ones who are right, because they do. I mean, most people do think they're the only ones who are right. But that nobody else's viewpoint is valid, and And it's the sort of, I don't know, almost religious fervor on
the It is. There is no question. That's exactly what it is. It's completely comparable to that.
And how can we have a rational debate when people are dismissive of any other viewpoints? You can't. You can't come to any common ground when essentially what they're saying is it's my way and the only way. You can't ever come to any kind of understanding or compromise, which is what democracy requires. So I don't know. I mean, it seems to me that Faux News and the other far-right media, and arguably on the left as well, although I'm frankly less familiar with them, are probably
and that says something in and of itself.
Well, yeah. I mean, the closest I ever came to far-left media was when I lived in Chicago. I used to sometimes see In These Times, which is essentially a democratic socialist newspaper because it was published in Chicago. But I mean, I don't even go to their website, so I wouldn't have any idea what they say nowadays. But I mean, I don't know. It bothers me the tactics that people will go to press their point. And you mentioned, I presume you're talking about the Earth Liberation Front, and they just came up here in this part of the world. There is... not here specifically. It's Australia, fortunately.
Yeah.
There's a coal-fired power plant in... I think it's the state of Victoria. Yes, it is. It provides power for Melbourne. And allegedly, it's one of the most polluting in Australia, certainly, but allegedly in the world and blah, 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 blah. So the Earth Liberation Front published the home address and I think a photo of the house of the guy who's the CEO of the company that runs it, which I believe is owned by the state of Victoria. I'm not really clear on that, but I think so. At any rate, the guy who runs the company, that's what matters. Then, all of a sudden, a letter showed up in this guy's mailbox from the Earth Liberation Front talking about him, mentioned his kids by name, mentioned something about their routines and their house. Now, the Australian authorities are rightly treating this as a terrorist threat, and
yes,
they're investigating with the intention of bringing the people to justice. But on what planet is this ever a permissible tactic? To bring somebody's personal family into it, to make them feel threatened. Like, what? This guy's suddenly going to say, oh, my God, I'm scared. I'm going to shut down the plant. No, that's not going to be what's going to happen. What's going to happen is the Australian Federal Police will guard the house. They'll guard the plant. And the protesters, which only about a fortnight earlier had chained themselves to the fences around this power plant, aren't going to be allowed within 100 kilometers of the plant.
Accomplished? What did they accomplish and what do they look like? And what are most normal people going to react to? Like, you're threatening somebody's kids. You're threatening somebody's kids. This sort of a very similar thing. This was many, many years ago, and I might have talked about this story once already, was where there was some research lab in suburban Maryland. I think it was in suburban Maryland. And they did animal testing, you know. The animals were not harmed in any way, shape, or form. I can't for the life of me remember exactly what – maybe they were chinchillas or something like that. I'm not sure. But, you know, one of these like PETA-type organizations – in fact, I think it might have even been PETA – broke into the facility and released all the chinchillas out into the wild. Now, I'm not really sure if they would have survived or I think it was something that would have – but, you know, out into the wild. And now they're free. And they were going to essentially starve to death because they didn't know how to feed themselves. They didn't have the skills on how to feed themselves. But the response was, well, at least they'll die free, starving to death. That certainly is humane, isn't it? And I think they were able to catch a large number of these, but there were still some that were going to starve to death. And it's just like, well, yeah, that's so much better. I'm not going to go into sort of the other side of it, but... that's helping the cause?
Yeah, and the thing is that I don't think that the people on the two ends of the spectrum have any idea how the things that they do or say look to normal people in between the extremes. I mean, I already talked about the Earth Liberation Front, but Randall Terry at Operation Rescue does the exact same thing.
Yeah.
When he talked about Dr. Tiller basically bringing it on himself, that was not helpful to his cause. And when he talks about violence, as he sometimes does, that's also not helpful to his cause.
No.
And what I don't get is why they don't see that.
Well, because they're blind to it. I did think that, as somebody pointed out, is that none of the, you know, reaction was that this was in a church.
Yeah.
And the whole notion of a church being a sanctuary, and that none of the people on the right seem to have much problem with that. And it's what we go back to when we talk about sort of the interaction or the civility or lack of it thereof on people leaving comments on the internet. Another thing that I also want to talk about is this notion that these are lone wolves, and I think at one point, which needs, I think, to be redefined, they're acting out on their own, but they're not. But they're not isolated like they used to be.
That's true.
You know, there is the internet and the access to enough hate, and echo chamber as you can possibly want for. And so, some of these organizations don't need to go out. I made this point in the post, they don't need to go out and recruit. They just need to have people come and read their stuff on their site.
Yeah.
And they accomplish the exact, the exact same thing. And so that, the action was of a single person. He wasn't part of some sort of a cell or group of people who have an agenda and are going to be going out and doing more of this. But the notion that somehow this is, the single person, the nut with the gun, all by himself, is really not quite the way it is. And I don't think it gives a real true sense of how these people interact. Although I will say that most of the news media is talked about how, he went on these websites and he blogged, and I think they did a pretty good job of sort of making that distinction.
And it's been documented that the killer of Dr. Tiller had connections with Operation Rescue, and as a matter of fact, he was given Dr. Tiller's home address and several other details by the local head of Operation Rescue, who herself was a convicted terrorist.
Right.
So yeah, the interconnection is worrying enough, but I mean, I don't know really ultimately what can be done about it. Surely the mainstream media can call out the right for the stupid things it's saying, mm-hmm. but the right, all it does is it just raises the volume and it just talks even more. I mean, we can't shut down the internet, obviously, and we can't shut down Fox News, obviously. So the question then becomes, what can we do? And you could say you've got MSNBC on the liberal side, and a couple of bits and pieces here of even more leftist media, but that doesn't counter Fox News. It doesn't counter the right wing publications. It doesn't counter talk radio. And I don't know what the answer is. I mean, I'm not proposing that there is one even necessarily. It's just that maybe we've got to try to focus on finding ways out of this where, I don't know, because if you've got the Republican Party in Congress, which clearly doesn't have a clue, and all it does is sits around all day.
No, really? Going, really? Yeah. Are you sure?
It sits around all day going, nope, 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 nope. Unless it's something far-right nutcasey. Oh, yes, of course, we love it. And so you've got no opposition no opposition party. You've only got opposition within the Democratic Party. Loyal opposition.
Right.
Where is the side on the voices on the right who can say, hang on a minute, it is not okay to call Sotomayor a racist. It is not okay to refer to an abortion doctor as a baby killer. It's not okay to do these things. But there's nobody on the right to do that.
Well,
the people who are doing that are in the center or left.
The thing is that there are some people on the right who are doing that, and then they are immediately castigated by everybody else, by these far
like Boss
left,
Limbaugh in particular.
By the far right. And the other thing that which I find, again, disturbing on both of the both perspectives, is that the people who are sort of screaming the loudest, it's entertainment.
Yeah.
It's almost theater. I mean, the perfect example to me is Ann Coulter, and you're just thinking like, okay, Can she possibly really truly believe this, or is it like a shtick? You know, it's like the Don Rickles of the far right.
Well, yeah, I've actually thought that about a lot of them. Glenn Beck is another one. I don't really know that he believes the shit that he says, because a lot of it is just crazy. I mean, I'm not talking about disagreeing with him, and I think he's wrong, which I do, of course. But some of the stuff he says is just crazy talk. And Bill O'Reilly doesn't talk crazy so much as he just talks shit. The same with Sean Hannity.
Well, and then he talks over everybody.
Well, yeah.
That's one of the things. When the few
Bill
times that I watch,
O'Reilly's a
it's
Thomas
like,
prick.
You know, someone's trying to make a point and it just talks right over him. It's just like, no,
Yeah.
Bill. And I've often, the couple times I've watched, and I don't watch anymore, but I've noticed that he usually does this when the guys, when whoever the guest is making a point, showing that, oops, he's wrong.
Well, I have noticed that Sean Hannity, well, first of all, I have to say, and this is probably the nicest thing I'll ever say about Sean Hannity, he does tend to let his guests get their word in edgewise, unlike Bill O'Reilly, who loves the sound of his own voice. And Sean Hannity occasionally has people on who I think surprise him with what they say, that he was expecting them to be nodding their heads in violent agreement with Sean, and when in fact they contradict what he says. But he doesn't shout over them. He doesn't shout them down usually, unlike Bill O'Reilly, who has never heard an opinion but his own that he likes.
Yes, that sums him up quite well.
Well, of course, there's a lot of other things going on in the news these days. The fight over health care has begun, and it's a bit too early to say where that's headed, apart from the fact that the Republicans will oppose it. That's the only thing we can say with any certainty. We don't even know at this stage if the Democrats are going to support it, but time will tell. Well, we have a bit of democracy going on in New Zealand. I'm laughing because I just blogged about this today, and it is really stupid. First of all, I should back up and say what it's about. The previous Labour-led government helped pass a bill that was written by the Green Party that outlawed smacking in New Zealand. And what that means essentially is that up until this was passed, there is a defense under criminal law that a parent could essentially beat their child and claim that it was reasonable force and be let off without charge or without prosecution. Now, that obviously is an abomination.
Oh, how 21st century of you. or is it 12th century? I don't know.
Exactly. It's more like 12th. It was just, absolutely inexcusable that that existed. And so the Greens were trying to change this, to try to give children protection from violence. And New Zealand has extremely high rates of violence against children, including child murders, which you have to call it. If a parent beats a child to death, it's a murder. No,
yeah.
You can't call it anything else. Parent or caregiver, I should say. So that's what this bill was intended to address. Now, of course, the right wing, and the Christianists in particular, were absolutely apoplectic over this because they said it was interfering with their rights as parents, their rights to beat their children, apparently, in this case. And so they tried to make an issue out of it. So they decided that they were going to make a referendum, what's called a citizen-initiated referendum on this. And they wanted it for the last general election. And the reason they wanted it in the last general election is they knew that it would attract the far-right voters who would vote against Labour as well, because they despise the Labour Party to the core of their being. And the chief electoral officer said, no, we're going to do a postal ballot on this, because if we do it during the general election, we won't know who the next government is until like 5 in the morning the next day. And we're just not going to do that. So that's what's happening.
Or you could have sent the vote. I'm sorry. You could have sent the votes to Iran. Oh, I'm sorry. No.
Just make it up.
Mm-hmm.
But so they're doing this postal referendum. And the question they came up with, and this is the actual wording, should a smack as part of good parental correction be a criminal offense in New Zealand? Now, that question is written so that they'll get the result they want.
Yeah.
Because there's nobody who wants somebody to be prosecuted for good parental correction. Nobody, not even people who are ardently in support of this bill. So that would mean they'd have to vote yes if they support the bill. They would have to say they're in favor of that. If they say they're not in favor of that and vote no, that means they are against the entire law. And what they're counting on is that people aren't going to be able to figure that out, and they're going to end up voting no, and then they can say, well, the majority of New Zealanders are opposed to this bill. The Prime Minister, who helped draft this law in a big compromise with the Labour Party, he was leader of the opposition at the time, has said that it doesn't matter what the referendum says. They're not going to change the law because it appears to be working fine, and they'll review it in due course and see if it needs to have any changes. But the police have not gone wild prosecuting parents for, you know, giving a light smack to a child or anything like that. What they've all they've prosecuted are people who have actually committed acts of violence, which is what the law intended.
Right.
So this is going to the voters. The ballot papers, I think, are going out next month, and they are due back in August. And the leader of the opposition, the Labour Party leader, has said that he's not going to vote at all because the question is so fundamentally flawed, he's boycotting it. And I'm actually thinking that's the best way to go. These citizen-initiated referenda are always advisory. The people can never do a binding referendum. Only Parliament has the power to make a referendum binding, if it chooses to.
Oh, I bet the people in California would love that. Anyway.
Well, that's in some ways, I think that's okay. Or if it was binding, then it should have a much higher signature requirement.
Yeah. Than
whatever it was. I don't know what it was. But anyway, the thing is, this is costing New Zealand taxpayers $9 million.
Whoa.
It's a self-selecting public opinion poll. Now, that $9 million could much better have been spent on helping families or helping, setting up spending money on child abuse prevention projects or, helping people in a bad economy. But, oh, no, the far-right Christianists have demanded that this thing go forward, and by gods, it will.
Why couldn't you have just had Gallup and done a survey of 3,000 New Zealanders?
You would think so, but it's not actually about this. All it's about for them is the chance to grandstand on this issue again, yeah, and to pontificate and huff and puff and carry on as if they're really important. And one of the leaders of it used to be an MP. He was with this party, which is now a party of one. But in the last election, he ran as part of a far-right Christianist party, which, of course, was obliterated in the election, as they always are. And So now he's just sort of, still spreading his filth around. I didn't think much of him when he was an MP. And I just,
really that, would never have known that. Would never have known that at all.
Oh, he's an idiot. He's just an idiot. But the main group that's behind it, or one of the main groups that's behind it, is a far-right Christianist group that, of course, has the word family in its name, as they always do. And they are adamantly opposed to this. They're adamantly opposed to recognition of same-sex relationships. And they are adamantly opposed to the HPV vaccine, human papillomavirus, or whatever it's called, the virus that causes over 95% of all cervical cancers in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. It's now being offered to young girls. I think it's between 12 and 17 or something like that.
Yeah, they've started for free. Here.
And they're adamantly opposed to that. The reason being, it's not because of side effects. It's not because of some religious objection to medical treatment or anything like that. It's because that it would encourage girls to be sexually promiscuous. I was just dumbfounded when I read that on their website.
How?
But you would rather girls die of cervical cancer than to risk that they might be sexually promiscuous. It's just, it's indefensible.
How?
Absolutely.
I'm sorry. How?
I certainly would never claim that the far right has any logic, but as I think I understand what they're saying, they're trying to say that if you take away the fear of catching HPV, that then they will be feel free to engage in premarital sex. I think that's what they're trying to argue. One of the things on the website is they said it was the equivalent of telling girls that it was okay to have premarital sex, which is also illogical because it's nothing of the kind. The fact is that huge numbers of people carry the HPV virus within them. And so even if they wait for their first intercourse until they're married, they're still at risk of being infected. So, I mean, you're not doing the girls any favors by denying them what's potentially a life-saving vaccine just because of your religious convictions. I mean, it's just
they
insane.
Really do live in an alternate universe, don't they?
They do. They absolutely
we
do.
We just need to find a way to send them back there.
I'd be up for that.
Yeah, well, I'll work on that between now and our next cast. I think we should go to comments now because I don't think I can. Comments.
Well, the first comment, this isn't in chronological order. It's sort of alphabetical order. This is over at amarinspodcast.com. It's from Tom the Ramble Redhead, who said, I know this will shock you, but I love this show. This is, of course, for our previous episode, episode 8. It says, it was interesting that you went to check out the other sites and had the reaction you did. As far as comments, I have been doing my podcast for the past 3 years and have had my share of love and warming comments. Insert snarky comment here. And of course, he's being sarcastic. He means he's had some bad ones. He says, But you have to just let it go and keep doing what you're doing. And I completely agree with that. There are some people who just delight in spreading badness and negativity. That's just the way it is.
There's not enough time in the day for that.
Exactly.
You know, or, yeah. Anyway, go on.
Yeah, so far on all of my sites, I haven't yet deleted a bad comment, unless it's overtly racist or sexist or something like that. Defamatory, that's usually the main thing for me. As long as they don't cross that line, which is entirely of my own choosing, I usually let comments stand. That doesn't mean I won't mock them. But
I deleted one when about around the election, around a post I had on Obama. It was just like, no, it goes.
Yeah, well, I'm not saying I wouldn't delete a negative comment. I just haven't yet. I suppose they haven't pushed me far enough. And now over at twopolitical.com, the first comment is from Roger Green, who said, this is commenting on the number of Muslims in America, and he has Nation Master, U.S. ranked 34th with 6 million. Wikipedia, U.S. ranked 52nd with 2.35 million. If Nation Master's number is correct, it's rather significant, a larger number than Libya, Jordan, Israel, or Kuwait. And I actually answered this one in writing and under admin for some reason.
Yeah, I couldn't figure out what the hell that was.
Oh, it's because I was already logged in to do something else and I didn't change it.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, sorry.
It says the faux news people were talking about numbers of Muslims in the U.S. being between 3 million, which they said was from the census, and 6 million, which wasn't attributed to any source. I wonder if that's where they got the number from. Anyway, thanks for supplying sources, Roger. And Roger's good like that. He can give us the background information to some things when we don't know what we're talking about.
We always know what we're talking about. Well, yeah. What's the next one?
It's from Montpassant, who says, about the left becoming fundamentalist as the right. Yes, they have been for a while, I'm sorry to note. The hard left seems now to be becoming anti-Semitic, too. Ironically, I think there has been a switch in that the left used to originate from Christian/church groups, at least in Canada. Their motivation was the old care for your neighbor community activism rather than a set of extreme right talking points. In Canada, the left-leaning National Democratic Party originated as the CCF Party, founded by a Baptist minister named Tommy Douglas. Tommy Douglas is considered the father of Medicare in Canada. Also, ironically, he's the grandfather of Kiefer Sutherland. The right-wing's pinup boy is Jack Bauer, which is kind of funny. But I think that's absolutely true that the left is becoming increasingly anti-Semitic. I know that on my blog, I posted a photo and commented a couple times on some Palestinian rallies in Auckland. And also there was a Palestinian shop owner in South Island somewhere who refused to serve to Israeli tourists.
No, I remember you talked about that.
Yeah, and I got flack from that on my blog from an obvious left-winger who was virulently anti-Israel and basically that the other side could do no wrong. And I've seen that in plenty of other places where Israel comes into blistering attack from the left, and yet they never criticize the Palestinians or Arabs generally or what have you. And I'm a bit troubled by that, I have to say. I mean, let me say before anybody jumps on my throat that I don't think that Israel is saintly by any stretch of the imagination. They've done a lot of really terrible, awful, horrible things, but that doesn't mean that you criticize only them and not the other side. There is a whiff of anti-Semitism, I think, that's going on a lot of what the left is talking about.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Well, I would say that pretty much brings us to the end of another Too Political podcast.
Oh, well, that's very good.
Well, until next time, which will be in 2 weeks, stay warm.
Yeah, well, eventually it's going to get warm here. Hopefully eventually gets warm down there. Oh, how is, just out of curiosity, how's the babe/swine flu down there?
Well, it's actually getting worse. The thing is that once Australia started really taking off with the number of cases, it was inevitable that the same thing was going to happen here, because there are thousands of people who cross the Tasman every week, in both directions. And Australia went from having no swine flu cases to having over 1,000 in something like 2 weeks. And New Zealand went from having, I think it was 17 or 19 cases, to now having over 100 maybe 3 weeks. But it's been growing quite quickly, and they are putting in their pandemic plans now, because we've had the first cases that have been transmitted within the New Zealand community, not from, not catching it from somebody who's traveled from overseas or not catching it overseas. So that means that we are now in a pandemic situation. And if one person in, say, a business is found to have is tests positive for swine flu, then the entire business is shut down and everybody goes into quarantine, which has real implications for, say, maybe a government call center, for instance. Because if one of those people is sick, then everybody is off. And, of course, it has implications for businesses trying to do business, too.
Yeah.
There was a case just recently of a seafood processing plant, I think it was in the South Island. And one person they have two shifts, and one person on a shift was found to be positive for swine flu. So everybody on that shift was going to have to be quarantined. So they thought, we could still carry on with the other shift, until somebody in that shift was found positive as well. So the entire plant was shut down.
Oh, wow.
And so there are potentially severe implications to this, but they still are trying to contain it. And it doesn't help that there are people who have been talking, it's been in the U.S. and Australia as well, of having swine flu parties to try to become infected so that they think that they'll have immunity to a stronger strain later. And the government is saying, don't you even think about it.
that certainly goes on the list of being stupid, doesn't it?
Well, it sure does.
Well,
yeah, because you don't know that you're not going to be one of those people who has a severe case or a severe reaction or what have you.
And right.
It ain't worth playing with.
No, that's interesting. Mm. Well, on that uplifting note.
Indeed.
Yes. Goodbye from Washington.
And goodbye from Auckland, New Zealand.
Bye.
See you next time.
Bye.
Complete links for this episode can be found at twopolitical.com. That's number 2political.com, where you can leave a comment, or you can call 206-426-0527.